Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Welcome to All Things Policy. The United States and the Taliban have signed what is being termed a historic peace deal on Afghanistan. But will this deal really bring us peace? We've been skeptical in the past, but I really want to ask Mr. Arni and Pranay, who are here with me today. I want to start with you, Pranay. First, tell us, what does this deal entail? What are the details in there?
Yeah, so to begin with, actually, Mr. Arni and I have been writing for around 5 years on topics related to Afghanistan. And this peace deal came as quite a rude shock to us. So from that's the lens with which we look at it. Okay. So to begin with, first of all, Aditya, you were wrong. It's not a peace deal between Taliban and the US. It is a deal between the US and the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan, which is not recognized by the United States as a state and is known as the Taliban.
Correct.
Okay. And the agreement goes at great pain to mention the Taliban with this long phrase every single time it does. Okay. So that itself is a big victory for the Taliban, which I'm sure Mr. Arni will tell us why. So let's begin with that itself, Mr. Arni. Why do you think this had to be mentioned in the deal?
Because they were insistent on being recognized as emirate. It has implications for governance later. Amir is not thrown up by a democratic process, but chosen by elders. Mm. So it's a selective process. This is what they want to do because they know that in an election, they're not likely to get more than, in a free and fair election, they would be probably be less than 20-25%. That's one of the reasons.
Yeah. So this has been a long-standing demand of the Taliban, right? To talk to us as Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan. Also, one more reason is that they don't recognize the current state of the Afghanistan state at all, right? So they think we are the legitimate rulers in a sense. And this, in a way, gives them that legitimacy as well.
Which is a paradox because every country in the world recognizes the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan, that Ashraf Ghani's government. No country in the world, not even Pakistan, recognizes the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan. Mm. And as you pointed out a little earlier when we were having a discussion, probably you could go into that. Here is an entity which is not recognized, issuing passports, whatever.
Yeah. We'll come to that when we discuss the part two. So this is the agreement between these two sides, okay? Not the Taliban, okay? Yeah, not just the Taliban, rather. So then, basically, the agreement begins by saying that the peace agreement is made up of four parts, okay? The first part is about guarantees and enforcement mechanisms made by the Taliban. Okay, now I'm shortening it, okay? I'm tired of using the long phrase myself.
Known hereafter as the Taliban.
Yes.
Known hereafter, yes. Also known as.
Yeah. So, guarantees and enforcement mechanisms that Taliban will commit to in order to ensure that the soil of Afghanistan is not used against the security of the United States and its allies. That's the part one. Okay, then part two is reciprocating guarantees and enforcement mechanisms by US for withdrawal of their foreign forces from Afghanistan. Okay, then there are third and fourth parts. The third part is about an intra-Afghan negotiations with all Afghan sides. So they don't mention the Afghanistan state because that would have been the demand of the Taliban, right? So they gave up on that as well. The fourth one is that permanent and comprehensive ceasefire will be one of the agenda items in that intra-Afghan negotiations. Okay, so that is what these four parts are. Now the peace deal which has taken place, that is on the first two points. It is not talking about intra-Afghan negotiations and the permanent and comprehensive ceasefire because Afghan factions are not involved, right? So the first two parts only deal with one, what are the guarantees that the Taliban makes, and two, what are the guarantees that the US makes in return. Okay, so this is how it is fashioned. Further, these two parts are again divided into sections within the peace agreement, and that's what we can talk about next. So the first part, for example, is about how US... So now they have exchanged part one and part two for some weird reason. I think someone has drafted this really badly. But okay, so now they talk about how the US is committed to withdraw from Afghanistan all military forces. So Mr. Arni, what are the specific things on this? How is the timeline going to play out about the withdrawal of the US forces?
You put it in a framework according to as the agreement flows. But I would probably juxtapose and shift it around. Mm. The very first part is that by the 10th of next month, that is 10th of April, 5,000 prisoners would be released by the Taliban, up to 5,000 by the Afghans and 1,000 by the Taliban. The next thing is on 29th of May, the U.S. will take steps to withdraw the sanctions that it has in place against the Taliban, which I presume means that against Haqqani network, and withdraw the various rewards or bounties announced, principally for $5 million on Sirajuddin Haqqani.
Okay.
Terrorist Sirajuddin Haqqani. The next one is by around the 15th of July. That is 135 days from yesterday. I mean, 135 days would bring it somewhere around 10th or 11th of July, but let's say middle of July. The Americans will draw down their troops to a level of 8,600 and close down five of its bases. The next important date is the 27th of August. The U.S. has committed that it will begin the process. The process of delisting from UN would be completed by then, which effectively means that by the end of August, around the end of August, the Taliban would have secured most of what it requires, except a position in Kabul. Sitting in Kabul, everything else is withdrawn. 5,000 back, troops back. Haqqani can come in and go out whenever he wants to. He no longer has to look over his shoulder at the drones. Those are the thing. The Americans get nothing except that the withdrawal is not like you had tweeted yesterday. It is no Vietnam type of withdrawal. No U.S. embassy, helicopters on the U.S. embassy withdrawing as they did in Saigon. It is a more honorable withdrawal. But let me bring in one point here before I give it back to you. By September, Mr. Trump will be in the midst of his re-election campaign. He would be at his weakest and most susceptible to pressure, external pressure. You can rest assured that there will be some hiccups along the way up to that time. The Taliban and its sponsors will then begin extracting more concessions from Mr. Trump, who will be in no position to resist it.
Right, exactly. So, like, it might not look like the fall of Saigon just yet, but it might later in the year.
So this is fascinating. Like, you gave a chronological view of what is going to happen in the next few months. And essentially what you're saying is by August, US will basically agree to most of the Taliban demands. And after it has agreed to it, it will not be in a position to back off as well. And Taliban will be in more will be at a stronger point in the negotiations because U.S. Domestic politics will kick in.
Also, this agreement which the Americans have made with the people also known as Taliban makes commitments on behalf of the Afghan government, the 5,000 troops. Now, you have taken away the most important card that they had. The Taliban has not agreed to negotiate with Ghani. They've agreed to negotiate with an Afghan...
Sides. That's the term used. That's all.
Which means that Mr. Ghani is not recognized. Though he controls the country and internationally known, he has no role. The one card that he had was the 5,000 troops. Even that you have removed. So where will this agreement go?
So to my mind, just fundamentally, even if you don't know anything about Afghanistan, if there are two parties on, say, one side and the Taliban on the other side, and one side makes a separate peace, obviously the party remaining, in this case, Ashraf Ghani's government, is going to be much weaker. It's going to have a much weaker hand. And there are no clear commitments from the Taliban, even for a ceasefire, right?
Yeah, it's just mentioned that it will be one of the agenda items subsequently in intra-Afghan negotiations. And that, what is that? That doesn't count much at all. Before we move that, so just discussing on this part about the US withdrawal itself, right? So in game theory, Aditya, we have this strategy, right? You never negotiate with a terrorist. Basically, if you play a kidnap ransom game over repeated outcomes, the thing you learn is you never negotiate with a terrorist, because if you do, the terrorist will only gain lessons that you should kidnap more and earn that as a revenue source. So you are seeing actually with this agreement in written how we are going against this learning, right? Not only has the US negotiated with a terrorist outfit, it has clearly come out as handing victory to a terrorist outfit. So that's like, I don't see how it can be projected as victory and how it will lead to peace and all that first. So now let's go to the second part, right? So second part deals with the kind of promises, I would just use loosely this word promises, that the Taliban has to make in return of all the things that the US will do. So I'm just reading out some main things. So for example, Taliban will not allow any of its members, including Al-Qaeda, to use the soil of Afghanistan to threaten the security of the US and its allies. It will send a clear message to those who pose a threat to the security of the US and allies that they have no place in Afghanistan. Okay. Then the Taliban will prevent any group or individual in Afghanistan from threatening the security of the US and its allies, and prevent them from recruiting, training, and fundraising. Right? And the final ones are that it will not provide visas, passports, travel permits, or other legal documents to those who pose a threat to the security of the US and its allies. So it's all basically restatement of the same thing, that the Taliban is not going to take any terrorist actions against US and its allies. What does this mean, Mr. Rani? Like, what do these guarantees actually mean?
Because they're not worth the paper they're written on, because it's a Taliban could turn around and say, we didn't allow, they came on their own. That's one point. And then we missed out one thing. They have their equivalent of a CAA or something there, in that they say that they will not give asylum or residence
in Afghanistan.
But it'll only be according to international migration law. I see no validity on any of these points. And like you said, Pranay, why make a mention of visas, passport, travel permits by an entity which is not recognized as a state? If they issue passports, who's going to recognize this passport?
So just see the paradox, Aditya. In the first statement, they take great pain to say that this is not a state. We don't recognize it at a state. But they also say that, hey, you should not issue passports and visas, which means you are acknowledging that they can do it. So there's a big paradox here.
Yeah. Okay. Now, obviously, this agreement seems to be bad news for the government in Afghanistan and possibly for the people of Afghanistan. But why should India care, Mr. Arnie?
Why should India? India has to care at a number of levels. It's not a great deal. It's not a good deal for the primary, of course. It's not a good deal for the Afghans. There is not one word mentioned in this agreement by the world's greatest power, which is negotiating with a terror organization on the constitution, on human rights, on women, and on the rights of minorities, ethnic and religious minorities. Of course, the U.S. could abrogate its responsibility and say that this is something that the Afghans have to negotiate amongst themselves, but that's not a valid point. You have been in that country for close to 20 years. You have been making these statements. You should make a mention of it at least, or at least get the Taliban to agree to talk about all these issues. There's been no mention of that. The second point from our point of view is, are we an ally of the U.S.? That's a question I need to ask. I don't know if we are looked at technically or legally as an ally of the U.S.
We are not.
So if we're not an ally of the U.S., all these promises don't apply to us. The U.S. and its allies, it says.
Yeah.
I presume this only relates, allies are those in
the NATO
NATO, who are there, the war against terror group. If that assessment of ours is valid, then we have to worry about the possibility of anti-India forces, hostile forces coming back and using Afghan soil. The next one is, of course, the mainstreaming of the Haqqani network. We have reason to be angry with this commitment. And we have reason to even oppose it in the UN, because the Haqqani network and the Americans themselves have confirmed it, were responsible for the attack on our embassy, which killed four people, two of whom were senior diplomats in the embassy. And we also know that the Haqqani network has a history of association with anti-India forces. There were training camps in the area which they controlled during the Taliban period, where in the Loya Paktika area, which will resurface because the Haqqani network will want a base on the Afghan side of the Durand line, and they're going to move in there sooner than later. And if we are not an ally, we are fair game for them.
Wasn't it Dennis Blair who called the Haqqani network a veritable arm of the ISI?
Admiral Mullen.
Mike Mullen. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
So now they are saying it can be a veritable arm of the ISI, but ISI is fine for now. Is what they are saying. Yeah.
Yeah, they're in the clear. Now, how will this affect India's relations with Pakistan, and how does Pakistan see this deal?
I don't know. We can only talk about at a flippant level that the ISI must be celebrating. It's a victory of sorts for them. So I don't know how it will play out. Whether the Pakistanis turn over a new leaf and join the Committee of Nations or continue to use jihad, it's bad news for us. If they're going to be good guys henceforth, they will push all the bad guys into Afghanistan. Their own bad guys and the bad guys that they have trained. And those bad guys are going to land up in Khost Paktika, that area. They'll get sanctuary there. And if they continue to be bad guys, they will still do the same. Plausible deniability is a word which makes all that thing. Plausible deniability is what we say. It's strategic depth to carry on more terror, carry on their jihad.
So there are two ways to look at it, Aditya. We were discussing this, right? One line of thinking in India is that now, even though Pakistan wins, they have a bigger problem on their hands now, right? That they have to look at Afghanistan and they have to invest resources on managing that front. So maybe because they are now invested in managing the problems of Taliban and Afghan politics, they will have less attention to pay on the Indian side. And in that way, it is good. So that is one line of thinking. I necessarily don't agree to that point, because the reason I feel that so is, one, this sequence of events will be seen as a big victory by the Pakistani military jihadi complex. So it is a big victory for them, morale boosting victory, and they will infer the lesson from all this that their strategy of having a jihadi arm actually works, can actually drive away the world's greatest power from Afghanistan, right? That's the lesson they will derive. So they gain more strength from the people who are advocating this line of thinking, gain more strength in the Pakistan ecosystem. Second, the reason I don't agree that Pakistan will invest more resources there and have little to do with India is because I think the amount of resources they require to run this kind of jihad is very little. So maybe they can run two-front war. The Pakistanis can run a two-front war below the conventional threshold quite easily, you know. What do you think, Mr. Ant?
I see another couple of danger points. Okay. This agreement sort of conveys that the Americans will not engage in any operations against the Taliban. And in exchange, the Taliban will not engage in any operations against them. And they also talk about lowered level of violence, etc., in previous comments. It does not rule out the possibility that the Taliban will take on the Afghan forces, and in which case the Americans will not come in support of these guys. The danger is in Kunduz, actually. Kunduz has fallen twice in the last 2 years. Once the Afghans did not fight. They were virtually surrounded and started disappearing till the American helicopters came in, and then they retook Kunduz. This time around, all that the Taliban has to do is enter Kunduz, start surrounding the Afghan bases. You'll find that the Afghans would prefer to walk away or surrender their area rather than put up a fight, because they know that they're surrounded on all sides by the Taliban and there's no air support coming. So Kunduz is the first one which will fall. If Kunduz falls, there are other dangers. It will slowly go to other places in the north, Shibargan, even Faryab, Balkh, Badakhshan, maybe even Herat. I'm not sure about Herat, because I'm not sure which are the bases the Americans will retain. Maybe Herat is one of them, or Shindand, or whichever. So, but then there will be a domino effect that these bases will fall, these areas will fall, and you'll have the Taliban sitting pretty in the north. So this is a danger that we have, and we have to face up to. We have to realize that the north has been traditionally been, the, all of Afghanistan has been with us, the north more so has been in touch with us.
Yeah, and this American troop withdrawal might be done in a phased manner, but I suspect from what you're telling me that they're not going to have much freedom of movement. They're going to be basically stuck inside their bases, right? So they're not going to do much good.
In three bases. They're withdrawing from five bases.
Yeah.
I don't know. There are various definitions of bases.
Yeah.
Some years ago, it was 400 bases, so we don't know. Mm-hmm. But there are about 6 to 8 major bases that we can think about. Six mm-hmm. is the figure I have, maybe 8. Mm-hmm. My own feeling is then they're going to hang on to Kandahar, Bagram, and probably Shindand or Herat. They built a major base in Herat. Mm-hmm. Those three bases they will hang on to. I'm not sure the rest of it is. They'll be stuck inside the bases.
What about CIA, Mr. Rani? You were saying there's no mention of that in the agreement.
Yeah, does mention that contractors and advisors and associated people.
I saw something about non-diplomatic civilian personnel, which seems to be a reference to intelligence.
Withdraw all non-diplomatic civilian personnel, private security contractors, trainers, advisors, and supporting services personnel. There is no mention of intelligence personnel.
Mm.
I take you back to what Trump has been saying for the last year or two, that they will leave a robust intelligence presence behind. And this agreement does not look to cover that. I could be wrong. CIA would be there, and CIA has its special forces also. They have about around 3,000 Afghans with them. Maybe it's more, maybe it's less, I don't know. Plus they have their highfalutin toys, their drones and things like that. The drones are under CIA control.
Mm.
We presume that they would have a base or two for themselves. Probably Taliban has accepted that.
Mm.
That's the reason it's kept out of.
So you think that the CIA will continue hostilities against the Taliban?
Well, I don't know. I really don't know. But I will think that they will remember that they lost 7 people in forward operating base Chapman some years ago when the Haqqani network, suspected to be Haqqani network, attacked. There was a suicide bomb. The suicide explosion in that base. So I don't think the CIA is some entity which will forget that easily.
So I think maybe it is like an insurance policy, right? Maybe Taliban, if doesn't agree to it, the CIA will still be there. That's a small victory, I guess. But I think one line we need to mention about what I see as some failure from the Indian side as well. Over the last 5-6 years, what we've done, we knew that even Trump had asked for more support on the Afghanistan front. Remember 2017 when he announced this South Asia strategy, he said that we need more presence of, more help of India. So that was an opportunity for India to do more. No, never before US and India were on the same side, right? Like it was 3-4 years back. Earlier, US used to be so cagey about Pakistan's involvement that anything that India does might, piss the Pakistanis off. So that's why it used to say, India, you should just stay back. And here you had a US president saying, why don't we do more? And I don't think there is sufficiently done from the Indian side as well. We continue to say that we are going to support economically, etc. But we never said anything on the security front. And I think we are going to pay costs for not doing much on that front.
The Americans uncharacteristically gave us permission to build Chabahar.
Mm.
We seem to have neglected that. We showed no urgency or dispatch in doing it. As Pranay had pointed out, I think in one of our pieces, we had written that they had allocated 250 crores for that, and we actually spent only 4 crores or something like that.
Yeah, I think we can build a few toilets there just about that.
The other bit is really, Trump has been saying that you've been only building libraries. You know what he means.
Hmm.
We have really literally been doing only that. We have not been doing much thing. And this was our backyard. We should have been doing more. I have one more point to make. About 15 days ago, there's a flurry of leaks to the press that the Afghans have asked for positioning of between 5,000 and 10,000 troops in a peacekeeping role I see no mention of that. There is no scope in this agreement. Maybe that will be fleshed out in some deal between the Taliban. But for the moment, there is no such demand. And I'm not sure under these, given this agreement, whether we can do anything.
Mr. Ani, there was also recently talks that India is talking to some factions of the Taliban, and some of our representatives went in Doha, I guess. I think a couple of days it was in the Indian Express. What do you make of that?
There must be some level of contact, because, you know, our ambassador in Doha has attended the signing ceremony. There's probably some level of contact. Also, the leader brother has signed it on behalf of the Taliban. But the leader of the delegation up to about a couple of months ago was Abbas Tanakzai, who was educated in Mao, speaks English, knows us, knows India in a sense. So I presume there would have been some contact. And Tanakzai, we know, has been trying to make overtures towards India. But whether they're credible overtures or whether he's doing it at the behest of his sponsors, we don't know. I presume there would be some level of contact. How deep, I don't know.
I think towards the end, I would just like to say there's a lot of narrative which is being spun that whatever is done, let's move on. And finally, this is the right step which will lead to peace. So I'm sorry to break the bubble, but I really don't understand how negotiating with a terrorist group, which continues to be a terrorist group, is suddenly going to lead us to peace and bring elusive peace. So I'm quite circumspect about that line of thinking.
To which I will add that from the way I look at it, it's all being done in the backdrop of the US elections. It looks like it's aimed for that.
All right, so obviously this deal is not good news for the Afghans. It's not good news for India. And India will have to be fairly imaginative in how it deals with the situation that's going to unfold over the next 1 year. Thank you so much, Mr. Arni, and thank you, Pranim. Thank you for joining us on All Things Policy.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website, takshashila.org.in.